Welcome Policy Fellow at the South African Institute of Race Relations, Sarah Gon.
Besides wanting to say Shana Tova to you, I also want to say that I'm going to hijack the session and take it where we didn't plan on going, Sarah.
That sounds a bit like Star Trek.
Just a little bit. No, it's only because in the context of the discussion this afternoon, there have been one or two themes that have repeated themselves today. And one would be the fact that the ANC seem to have two rules, one for the rest of us and one for themselves. And that kind of got me thinking about the social contract and the importance of one rule for all. And suddenly, you know, aware of NHI expropriation without compensation. Are we talking about a desperate party who's doing everything they need to do in order to survive? What is going on? Why are they doing what they are doing, Sarah?
Okay. From a policy point of view, most of the legislation that they are putting forward, you mentioned expropriation, you've mentioned national health. The ANC has always had, for many decades, it's had the socialist plan of the National Democratic Revolution. And what makes it the National Democratic Revolution was the idea that Lenin propounded, which was that when you want to make a society, change a society into a communist society, you stick with, you don't do anything immediately. You stick with capitalism.
Yeah.
And then you gradually move to implement, you know, to impose more and more socialist policy until you have effectively a socialist state. And from there, you transition relatively quickly to a communist state. So it's always been, ANC policy. It was in the 60s, 70s and 80s and it continued into the 90s and it was solidified and it's been essentially, approved at every, elective conference by the ANC. So we shouldn't be that surprised. What is perhaps a little surprising is that it's come under the premiership of Cyril Ramaphosa, you know, the great belief that he was the transformer. He's a transformer, but in the socialist direction. And I think the pace with which they've tried to pick things up is partly has the electorate in mind, but it's largely because it now wants to be seen, it now wants to achieve what it is struggling to achieve because everything else is failing. So if it can, it's literally failing in every direction you could possibly look in. So it wants to see if it can get its socialist policies in, it gains control of every lever in society, as they are wont to say. And once they've got every lever, it doesn't matter what elections and how you govern them, how you run them after that. It's quite irrelevant.
Yeah, listen, I'm the very last person on the planet who should be talking about Marxism and socialism because I've probably read one paper once in my life. But didn't Marx say that the fertile ground for his theories were in Europe, in first world countries that could afford his economic theories?
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's what's fascinating with this sort of cult of Marx is that he was looking at circumstances as the Industrial Revolution was taking off. And as we know, I mean, it transformed Western society completely. But there were privations. I mean, people were exploited. They worked too long. They worked too hard. They worked in bad conditions. So you had the two opposing issues arising through that time. And I suppose what those of us who are critical criticized the fact that Marx was looking at it from the perspective literally of the bourgeoisie. I mean, he wasn't employed. He was a sort of, not quite say a man of luxury, but he wasn't in the fight. He was looking at it from outside. And they say that even towards the end of his life, his ideas started changing, but he was no longer in control of who took the ideas and what they did with it. And so what his changes or his change thinking was never carried on into the Russian Revolution and beyond.
Absolutely fascinating. Had no clue that was the case. You mean there could be Marxism version 2 had we actually read the follow-up?
No, that's exactly right. Because, I mean, a lot of people may, and you would, it's not entirely inexplicable that he may have changed his mind, because by the end of his life in the late 19th century, of course, by then the Industrial Revolution was changing its nature and the benefits of it were increasing. So whatever he sort of foresaw or suggested in advance may have already been an outdated notion by the time you were hitting the latter part of the century. Because the Industrial Revolution was not, as so much in the socialist world, was not a static thing. It was developmental. I mean, you started to have things like electricity, which was something it didn't exist when he laid down the original manifesto.
Absolutely fascinating. Think how much pain the world could have been spared if that was in fact the case. My goodness me. Yeah. Sara, we don't have time to get onto the Zuma South African issues. I did tell you I was going to hijack you this afternoon. Thanks for indulging me. That was absolutely fascinating though. And I'm sure that our politics will give us lots to chat about next week. Oh no, wait a minute. We're not on air next Thursday, are we?
I have to keep track. Kathy's note on the dates because it is a bit tricky. But whenever, I will see you.
You will indeed. Sara Garden of the South African Institute of Race Relations. Thank you so much for your input. Absolutely fascinating.